All right, well, welcome to the Statesman Journal's Explore Oregon podcast. I'm your host, Zachary Ness, and in each episode, we highlight Oregon's most beautiful and interesting places. In today's show, we're diving into one of the most spectacular and troubled places in all of Oregon, Oneonta Gorge. It was once among the most Instagram famous places in the Northwest, but has now been closed for almost 7 years. In this podcast, we'll look at what made it so special, why it stayed closed, and how it might reopen. Before we get rolling, I want to highlight the sponsors of this podcast that make it possible for us to hire and pay our outdoor journalism interns every spring, summer, and fall. Our first sponsor is the American Forest Resource Council, supporting responsible forestry on public lands throughout the Pacific Northwest. Learn more at amforest.org. We're also supported by Visit Tillamook Coast, a land of ocean and forest just an hour from the Willamette Valley that this spring will offer special volunteer vacations, designed for visitors to spend a day doing a stewardship project and another headed out on a Tillamook Coast adventure. We'll have more details on this a little bit later in the show. Finally, we're brought to you by the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that reminds visitors to leave no trace and buy local firewood when camping at state parks to limit the spread of invasive insects. Okay, let's head into the depths of Oneonta Gorge. But first, here's some guitar music to get us rolling. All right, well, in today's podcast, we are going to talk about the rise, the fall, the closure, and the future of a truly magic place, a fern-covered slot canyon known as Oneonta Gorge. To visit it was not a traditional hike. It was a walk up a creek, sometimes in waist-deep water, below vertical cliff walls to a stunning waterfall. For a generation of Oregon explorers in the 1970s and 80s and 90s, it was a sort of gem hidden in plain sight. It's located in the Columbia Gorge, not far from Multnomah Falls, and just off the historic highway. It was easy to access, but only if you knew where to look. With the rise of the internet and digital photography, just about everyone in Portland figured out where to look. There were a handful of spots that saw their visits spike with the rise of Instagram and social media platforms, and Oneonta was definitely one of those places. It got so crowded that officials worried about the impact on endangered fish and rare plants that grew there. Just as it was getting overwhelmed, the 2017 Eagle Creek fire happened. It closed the gorge, and it has stayed closed ever since. So why am I bringing this up now? Well, there has been some movement on the issue. As I recently reported, the Forest Service is in the beginning stages of crafting how they'll reopen the gorge once they decide it's safe. We might have a permit system here, we might see a full closure, we might see it reopen like in the past. At this point, that's what's being determined. In this podcast, I wanted to talk about the backstory of Oneonta and bring it up to the present. We'll start with a waterfall explorer and writer who's been visiting since the 1970s. Then we'll hear the unique story of how the gorge got its name. And fun fact, it involves one of the West's most famous photographers. Finally, we'll talk about the current situation at Oneonta and why it has stayed closed and how it might reopen. One last thing before we get going, you'll hear me pronounce the name of the gorge with a T throughout this podcast, as in Oneonta. Now, there are others that pronounce it without the T, as in Oneonta. I've definitely heard it both ways, but I wanted to know for sure, so I went all the way to the source to get the correct pronunciation, and I'll explain how just a little bit later in the show. All right, to start off our conversation about Oneonta, we are joined today by Tom Kloster, one of Oregon's most knowledgeable writers and advocates for public lands across Oregon, particularly in the Columbia Gorge and Mount Hood area. You can find his writing on his WYEAST blog. That's W-Y-E-A-S-T blog.org. Hey, Tom, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
All right, so let's start here. When did you first visit Oneonta Gorge? And can you kind of describe it? Like, what made it stick out? What was unique or special about it?
Well, it would have been when I was probably like junior high, high school, somewhere in there, you know, early teenager. And it was notable at the time because there was no trail. It was one of those places where I actually walked up a creek bed to get to a waterfall. So it was definitely unique and known for that at the time.
Yeah. How well known was it at that point? You know, compared to other places, was it generally known? Was it kind of a secret? Like what was it back then?
I would say it was generally known, mostly to photographers. It was not heavily visited. Back in those days, you could go there on a weekend and there might be a couple other cars there. And you might pass someone, you know, on the way to the falls, or you might have the place to yourself, completely to yourself. It was not heavily visited at all. And again, this is back in the 70s, well into the early to mid 80s. It was really not visited much.
Okay. Can you kind of describe it, you know, for people who maybe are new to Oregon and it's been closed the entire time they've been here or just, you know, never got out there. Can you describe what it's like to be in there?
Sure. Well, so in those times back before the log jam started here in the 2000s, it was actually just like river cobble that you're walking on all the way from the historic highway bridge, which is closed, but is just off the historic highway. And you just hop down there and you walk right up the creek bed. And it was actually pretty wide open. There was, you know, a few deep pools, but you had, you know, basalt walls on each side, 100 feet high. Just, you know, it was a slot canyon, which is somewhat unusual in Oregon. And you couldn't see Oneonta Falls from the old highway bridge, really not until you got almost to the end of the gorge, could you see the fall. So that was the fun part of it, was getting to this really nice waterfall at the end of the hike.
How did you compare it? Like, does it compare to any other stuff in the gorge or many places?
It doesn't really have a parallel. There's some box canyons and narrow, you know, canyon sections in the gorge, you know, lots of that place like Eagle Creek and so on. There's nothing quite that tall and narrow and long in the gorge. It's really quite unique that way.
You know, a lot of people like would be surprised they would get there and they'd realize there wasn't a trail. How far was it up there? And can you describe the experience or how people would go about doing it, how long it took?
Yeah, so I'm just going to guess. I think it's about a half a mile or so from the old highway bridge up to the falls. And, you know, all of that waiting in the creek, if you went, you know, toward the end of the summer, back in those days, people went, again, when it was, there weren't log jams, it was pretty much just, you know, river cobbles and a few boulders here and there. The whole adventure was to try to do it without getting wet. And it was actually not impossible to do that in late summer when the water was low, because there's lots of, you know, exposed gravel bars, you know, throughout the little narrow gorge. And then there was just enough toehold along the walls that you could get around some of the pools. So people would actually make that kind of the adventure. If you went when it was a little wetter, well, you're going to be, you know, up to your thighs in water. But yeah, it seemed super pristine. It didn't seem like there were hardly even any people in there when you got there. It was rare to find anyone at the falls when you got there. You might pass someone on the way coming in or out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a special connection to the gorge because you went on a first date there with somebody, right?
I did. Actually, my wife and I met working at summer camps, and she found out what she was getting into right away. Our first date, we waded up to Oneonta Falls, and we have our 40th anniversary in May. So it was not false advertising. So she was okay with that.
Well, it must've been a successful first date location. Was she impressed?
You know, she enjoyed that kind of thing. And I think also because she's a person who will jump into a lake and swim and so on. She had no problem getting wet. Another date might have been unhappy about waiting up in a creek canyon. But she enjoyed it a lot.
Okay, you've touched on this a little bit, but you know, how many people would be visiting there in, say, the, you know, the 70s, the 80s, 90s, 2000s? Like, did you start to see a gradual increase, or did it stay kind of the same at that point?
You know, I think it was gradual. I was thinking about this. The two big pulses in, like, all of a sudden more people going in there. One was with the advent of digital cameras, especially digital SLRs around the early 2000s, because, you know, people started sharing stuff on the internet, you know, as soon as the internet was up in the 90s, but not in a huge way. And photos weren't that great yet. But as soon as people were taking digital photos with digital SLRs, all of a sudden people who are aspiring photographers or pros started sharing that spot. Like a lot of places, everybody wanted to go capture that scene, and there was kind of an explosion. Before that, you know, you could scan your film or your slides and share it, but it wasn't quite as immediate, and people really weren't sharing photos in a big way until we had digital photography really explode in the early 2000s. So that was the first that I saw people, you know, a lot more people going there, especially photographers, you know, dragging a tripod in there. You get that photo of the falls or simply a photo of the gorge, you know, looking back out through that really narrow canyon out toward the opening. And then the next big pulse really came not long after that, when social media itself took off in the late 2000s. And that's when it exploded. I mean, it was the digital photography brought in a few more people. So you might find a few photographies in there, or a family or two on a weekend. And it seemed like there were more people, for sure, but it certainly wasn't really what became a mob scene after about, you know, maybe late 2000s, around 2010, 12, when people just started posting stuff on social media, and that just drew hordes. It was one of the most profound social media effects I really saw anywhere on Mount Hood or in the Gorge.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's always been this sort of debate about how much impact social media had on Oregon's outdoors versus just the big population growth, particularly in Portland and Bend, like which was it? But it really felt like this was one of those places that just got blown up by the early days of Instagram and Facebook. Like, do you think that's accurate? Like that those two went hand in hand specifically just because of that dramatic picture that you could get in there?
Yeah, I think so. I what I've seen in terms of that effect is that places are easy to get to. So, I mean, that matters. It's incredibly easy to get to, you know, you park at the mouth of the gorge, there's no hike, you just go in. So that's one sort of vulnerability of it. It's really unique. You know, it's quite a unique experience, not just hiking. It's this cool canyon that you're canyoneering in, so to speak, even in your tennis shoes. And then I think also anything with like a place to jump in the water, social media, you know, hammered on it. So another place in the gorge, for example, Punchbowl Falls on Eagle Creek, you know, people used to jump off the top of that before social media, but it was rare. Mm-hmm. And social media created like a massive user trail to the little overlook above that falls. And just tons of people, you know, saw video clips, had to go do it, to the point where it's like there was a bare spot, you know, on top of the cliff above the falls. Like this platform, like formed up there from so many boots up there. And I saw that in lots of places where if there was a place to jump off, swim, that kind of thing, it really amplified mm-hmm. the attraction. And, you know, it's kind of intuitive on a hot day in Portland, you know, we have a lot of them in the summer. It sounds pretty appealing. And then you pull up social media and here's someone, you know, that you know, his picture wading around a waterfall in the gorge. That looks pretty good, you know. So it just kind of exploded there. And you could see that any place where people could swim or wade in the gorge around Mount Hood, that was really accessible. So I think it was probably the most vulnerable you could come to. Easy to get to, really interesting hike. You could swim in the pool at the base of the falls. All of that just made it really attractive. You know, even beyond like the hiking community, it was really just anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It was almost like the perfect place when you think about it, like the proximity to Portland. So you got a lot of people, like just the dramatic nature of the picture, the water, like you talked about. I mean, it checks almost every box for those places that really got exploded.
It's a classic tragedy of the commons kind of a example too, because everybody wants to go there and nobody, you know, wants to not have the experience themselves, but they also don't want to see it, you know, stampeded. And so, it put a lot of pressure on the Forest Service. And I guess I would add that it was fortuitous in a way, but right around that time, a boulder came loose and dropped down at the lower end of this narrow gorge, a good sized boulder, you know, like the size of a Prius, and you know, for the gorge that's small, but it was big enough. And that boulder started the log jam, and so there was a confluence of things. There was like all these people going in there, and then all of a sudden you had this log jam form where these logs are getting hung up on this rock. It was like a tooth sticking out of the creek bed at the mouth of the gorge. And so that grew to epic proportions. One person drowned, at least one person drowned there trying to get through that. And so it went from just really busy people, you know, walking in a fairly safe, you know, way up the floor of this canyon, to all of a sudden they had to navigate this really pretty gnarly log jam.
Well, I'm curious, did you keep going there once it got really popular? Like, did you know, can you kind of describe what it was like when it got that popularity? Because even after the logjam, there was still, I mean, that some of those pictures you would see when there'd be that bottleneck of people, it was wild. Did you go there, or what was sort of the hiking community's like outlook on it, or how did they view it?
Yeah, no, I stayed away. Really, I stayed away as soon as it started getting busy there. It took the magic out for me. You know, I go hiking because I want to be in the outdoors and you know, just enjoy nature. And it got to be so crowded, I just avoided it entirely. And there's a lot of other places to go. You know, if I want to go and have a similar experience, there's lots of places that had nobody and I know where to find them. So I stayed away. I think a lot of photographers as well got frustrated because there wasn't a great way to get in there and get a picture without, you know, 30 people in the photo, you know, because it was so crowded at the end. And so that was, I would say probably the last time I went there was maybe like around 2004 or five. And it was pretty, I'm trying to remember when I went, it was pretty early in the season, a lot of water coming through, cold, you know. So people waited, you know, when it got really popular, they were waiting in there all the time, not just in the depths of winter, like when it was flooding, but certainly like way more than just summer. It was in the summer that you had those massive crowds, and I wouldn't have gone near it.
Yeah,
it was so crowded. The other thing that was kind of hard for me was the ODOT had restored the old Oneonta tunnel that had existed there. You know, there was this old highway bridge and it pointed at just a wall. A lot of people didn't know that there was actually a tunnel there that had been filled in when the highway was realigned in the 1930s. As part of, you know, rebuilding the old historic highway as a state trail, ODOT had emptied out that old tunnel and restored it beautifully, had a, you know, like a wood interior lining and so on. And one of the really sad things to me was that just kind of this mob scene at the gorge also just totaled that tunnel. And so people were carving, you know, their names into the walls of this tunnel. And I was kind of documenting because it sort of broke my heart because it was this really precious thing that was just, I think, just unappreciated. So that was hard for me to see people coming there, not really realizing, you know, that the gorge itself was special, that this tunnel had been restored, you know, just brand new restored, and we're automatically sort of destroying it. Ironically, the gorge fire burned the tunnel lining out, so that first round of vandalism got erased. And I haven't gone in the tunnel in a few years. I don't know how well it's faring now, but I imagine it's not as hammered as it was, because there's just not as many people milling around that area as there were during that heyday.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it. You know, obviously the Eagle Creek fire happens in 2017 and changes a lot. And, you know, as for the gorge, you know, originally it was one of the many places closed by the fire. But in the years since, pretty much most of those places have reopened and Oneonta hasn't. Has that been a bummer for the Portland hiking community, or how do you view the extended closure? Because I've heard both things. I've heard people who are disappointed and want to go back, and I've heard others who are just like, you know, it was such a mess there, I'm kind of glad it's still closed. So where do you fall?
Yeah, I'm in the latter. I think, you know, I was hoping the Forest Service would before the fire, come up with a way to manage access. And so I kind of go to that tragedy of the commons, you know, perspective. At some point, there's one Oneonta Gorge, and, you know, Portland is many times the size of the population that existed, you know, when those gorge trails all through the gorge were built, and they're all suffering from, you know, overuse. And so this is a broader problem. But in that particular spot, since there's not even a trail, it's just people going in there, I'm fine if the Forest Service, you know, figures out, you know, what's a reasonable amount of people to keep that experience a positive one, and then set up a lottery like they do for Mount St. Helens. It's not an unusual thing.
All right, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. When we return, we'll talk about how Oneonta got its unique name, and I promise it's not exactly what you'll expect. Then we'll hear from a former recreation manager in the gorge about why it has stayed closed and how it might reopen. So stay with us. This message is brought to you by Visit Tillamook Coast. The Tillamook Coast Visitors Association is excited to bring back their Volunteer Adventures program for 2024 that will welcome groups from inside or outside Tillamook County to lend a hand in stewardship programs while also having a good time. One example of an itinerary would be spending one day clearing invasive brush or working on a hiking trail. The next would include something like a guided hike or kayak trip, the type of activity that highlights the Tillamook area and shows why doing stewardship projects is so important. All meals, lodging, and activities are included. The program is designed to offer participants the opportunity to give back to our popular area while also learning the vital role stewardship plays in preserving our natural places. If you want more information or to sign up early, search for Tillamook Coast Volunteer Adventures or email Dan Hagg at dan@tillamookcoast.com. Once again, that email is dan@tillamookcoast.com. Our third and final sponsor is the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department that invites Oregonians to explore parks this fall and winter to experience the beauty of those seasons. If you're camping, remember to get firewood from sources local to your destination to avoid bringing invasive insects, such as the devastating emerald ash borer, into parks. This will help preserve the health of Oregon's forests for seasons to come. Learn more about protecting Oregon's ash trees at stateparks.oregon.gov.
I'm Andy Geisler. I'm a forester at the American Forest Resource Council, and we're proud to sponsor the Explore Oregon podcast. Like you, I love the outdoors. On many days, the forest is my office. I work on the ground with public lands agencies on good forest management projects. Forest management helps achieve important conservation goals while providing sustainable timber. Science-based forestry helps improve wildlife habitat, outdoor recreation, clean air, and water. And it's essential to providing renewable, climate-friendly wood products. Learn more about us at amforest.org.
Okay, welcome back. Before we talk with former recreation manager Stan Hinatsu about what comes next for Oneonta Gorge, I wanted to dive into the origin of its name, because it's a pretty interesting story. It's such a beautiful word that I was sure it had to be derived from a local indigenous language, but it turns out that's not quite the case. The name actually comes from a guy named Carlton Watkins, a famous photographer of the 19th century. He's best known for taking pictures of Yosemite Valley that helped influence its preservation as a national park. But Watkins also spent a ton of time in Portland and in the Columbia Gorge in particular. Travel through the gorge was difficult in the mid-1800s, so Watkins used steamships, barges, railroad portages, all manner of travel to thoroughly capture the waterfalls and forests. The pictures he took helped bring the Columbia Gorge to prominence. And one of the places he photographed was our very own Slot Canyon and waterfall, and he named it for his hometown, Oneonta, New York. So the name of the waterfall actually comes from a town in central New York, about 3.5 hours north of New York City. Now, the word itself is believed to mean place of open rocks in the Mohawk language. So ultimately, it does have a tribal origin. It just comes from the East Coast and not the West. And in a lot of ways, a word that means place of open rocks is a pretty good description of what makes this place so beautiful and fascinating. Now, one last thing, getting back to that pronunciation of whether it's Oneonta or Oneonta. Since Watkins named the gorge for his hometown in New York, I just went ahead and called up the city in question. I talked to a lovely woman at reception who worked for the city council, and she assured me that the town's name is pronounced Oneonta with the T. So we can officially put that mystery to bed. If you travel here in the Columbia Gorge, you are most definitely headed to Oneonta Gorge, just as Watkins intended. All right, up next, we've got an interview that I recorded with former Columbia Gorge Recreation Manager Stan Hinatsu last year, just before he retired. He talked about the complexity of planning recreation for a place like Oneonta Gorge and all the unique challenges that it brings. So here is Stan. You can hear the full interview that I did with him in our Columbia Gorge podcast episode.
Okay, well, one of the questions that I hear about a decent bit, and I'm positive that you hear about all the time, is specific to Oneonta Gorge. Now, This was never an official hike, but heading up Oneonta Creek into that kind of wonderland of a slot canyon was very sought after. People loved it. We talked a long time ago about how overuse was impacting that area. Mm-hmm. It's been closed for quite a while now since the Eagle Creek fire.
Yeah.
So the question I hear, and I know you hear it, is, will it ever reopen in its previous way? It is, after all, public land, but it does have was having a number of problems before the fire. So what's the future plan for what's a really special place?
Yeah, no, it really is a special place. And as a kid, me and my family, we do that same hike as the hundreds and thousands of people doing have done a pre-Eagle Creek fire and would still like to do it. So it is definitely a unique and very awesome experience. But as you mentioned, pre-Eagle Creek fire, it was just getting overwhelmed with people, with rescues and the sheer number of people. It did cause us some real concern about, you know, both the recreation experience as well, and probably more importantly, impacts to natural resources. That creek is an anadromous stream, and to the threatened salmon species, and I can't name the ones, but it is used by those species, and it has some uniqueness in terms of its botanical characteristics as well. So that not only were we concerned with the recreation experience, but certainly the natural resource impacts to it as well. So the Eagle Creek fire kind of was a blessing in disguise for Oneonta Gorge, in that obviously we closed it mainly because it was for safety issues. That, again, as I mentioned earlier, that Oneonta drainage burned pretty intensely in there, so that and because of that high intensity burn, it's more susceptible to debris flows, and the last thing that we wanted to see is a debris flow coming down, you know, after a thunderstorm or something during a warm summer day and go through that gorge with people in it. So that was one of the main reasons we closed it. Also, just the more immediate issues of rocks falling into the gorge from just, again, I mentioned, you know, the slopes with the loss of ground vegetation or rolling rocks and falling trees and stuff. So that was a big concern. Now that we're 4 years away, that concern has somewhat, the rolling rocks and stuff, it's somewhat mitigated, but the potential for debris flows are still there. We have done some initial analysis on a number of options for us to consider, all the way from opening it up the way it was before to keeping it closed and everything in between. So our next step in the next year, 2 years, is doing a full analysis on options for us to pursue on, again, all the way from keeping it closed to open it. There's not a perfect solution. Obviously, keeping it closed isn't a good solution for recreationists, but unfettered use the way it was before, of course, impacting, again, those natural resources. And then are there options in between that we can consider? Maybe seasonal openings, maybe a permitted entry. And again, we talked about just the capacity for us even to administer something like that. That will be a challenge. Maybe it's going to be a fee to get in. So we're considering all of those options. We just haven't done the analysis yet for that. And that will be coming here probably in the next year or two.
Okay. So just to recap, I mean, it's going to be closed probably, you know, this summer, maybe the next, this summer for sure. Maybe the next year, as you consider whether, you know, how to reopen it or even if to reopen it.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. So again, that was longtime recreation manager Stan Hinatsu of the U.S. Forest Service. He managed the Columbia Gorge Recreation for many years before retiring last year. So since that interview and just last month, I updated what comes next for making decisions about Oneonta. The first thing is that it's likely to stay closed another 2 years or so. That's due to the high level of danger that is still very present, according to gorge officials. All the issues that Stan talked about remain in play in keeping it dangerous. But since that interview, even more logs have built up in Oneonta Gorge. Earlier, you heard Tom talk about how that log piles made the trip increasingly hazardous. Well, with the fire-burned trees, the number of logs crammed up in there has skyrocketed even more. And from a safety perspective, I guess that issue could keep it closed for a while. However, planning for how to reopen it is underway. Forest officials are currently reaching out to staff biologists, the tribes, other agency officials to gather information. Then they're likely to bring these four scenarios, some of which we talked about earlier, to the public. So those options are, one, unrestricted access, similar to the way it was prior to the Eagle Creek fire. Number two would be a complete closure to access, so nobody goes in there at all. Number three would be a seasonal public access closure outside of salmon and steelhead spawning seasons, meaning it would be open sometimes and closed other times. And number four would be open or seasonal public access with trigger points to limit use. And that could include something like a limited entry permit system, the type of which we've seen in the Central Cascades and other places like Dog Mountain. So a decision on how or whether to restore access to this special place most likely comes in 2026 or 2027. At that point, it would have been an entire decade since the area had last been open. Here's what Kloster had to say about the idea of a permit system and returning to Oneonta Gorge in general.
I think you could let, some amount of people go in there, enough to go in where you feel like you have a bit of a, outdoor experience, and yet people could, reserve a time to get in and have a chance to get in there at some point in their lifetime. If you think of it that way, a lot of people climb St. Helens once and they're good, and there's no reason why experiencing Oneonta wouldn't be that kind of a thing where, you get a lottery and get in there and see it. It doesn't really matter what kind of weather it is when you go in terms of, it doesn't cloud over. You get to the end and the waterfall is always there no matter the weather. So unlike St. Helens, where you might be in a whiteout, and then want to have to do it again. So I think it's just people have to accept that it's there's not enough oneana to go around. We have to ration it out a bit.
All right, well, that's about all the time we have left in today's show. If you like what you've heard, check out our catalog of more than 60 episodes featuring Oregon's most beautiful and interesting places at statesmanjournal.com/explore, along with Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We'd once again like to thank our sponsors, beginning with the American Forest Resources Council. AFRC supports responsible forestry on public lands throughout the Pacific Northwest. For our environment, for our economy, and for the future. Learn more at amforests.org. We'd also like to thank Visit Tillamook Coast. If you want to plan a trip out there, you can check out their outdoor recreation map that shows all the places to hike, swim, boat, and camp. You can find that map at tillamookcoast.com/recreation-map. Once again, that's tillamookcoast.com/recreation-map. And thanks to the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, which stresses the importance of recreating responsibly and leaving no trace in Oregon's outdoors. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for the next edition of the Explore Oregon podcast.